disruption zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
It is the Disruption Zone. Cameron Mills and I together again. This time we are broadcasting from our respective homes as we practice responsible social distancing. How about it, Cameron?
Well, how does this fall in line compared to where the Disruption Zone you and I released a few weeks ago, where I think we were careful, but we were carefully kind of poo-pooing the panic that was going on. So where do you sit on that now? Now that we're up to what, 145,000 cases?
Yeah, personally, I think the panic is still a bit overblown.
Okay,
I posted an article by Peter Hitchens on Twitter earlier today, where there's just an enormous amount of evidence that, you know, that, and I don't want to poo-poo this. This is a very serious situation.
Sure it is.
And I happen to agree with the social distancing right now. My concern is how long we stay on this sort of lockdown.
Yeah.
And at some point, there's going to be more people killed by the damage done to the economy than by the virus itself. So what I am for is maybe another 2 weeks of this, and then as that curve begins to dampen down, we start to sort of do a tapered return to business where once testing is in place and we can tell if you've had it or antibodies in it in your body, then we can kind of say, hey, get back to work. The rest of us will stick in our homes until this is done. So I'm for a tapered return to business at starting in about 2 to 3 weeks.
But let me ask you this. Don't you feel like, because this whole thing, the social distancing thing, the fact that, you know, I might get out once a day, if that, and I spent all last week at home, the things that are changing in my life, things that are, I mean, there's some benefit to this somehow.
Yeah.
There are things that are changing, things that I'm working on that I'm like, well, when else am I going to have time or find time or force myself to find time that I have now that is being forced upon me?
100%.
There's so many opportunities.
Yeah. I'm a silver lining guy. You're an optimist like me. I've never actually ever in my life seen you depressed. You know, we tend to be silver lining type guys, and I'm with you on that, which is kind of why I wanted to talk about like what lessons we're learning from the so-called quarantine, you know. And I don't know about you, but for me personally, I'm an extrovert who gets a lot of energy from being around people.
Yeah.
And I thought this was going to be utter hell for me.
Forced to be spend so much time with your wife.
Just my wife, you know, just my wife and my dogs.
Yeah.
I can't speak for her. But to be honest with you, I've found a side of myself that I didn't even know existed, and that is a side of myself that actually thoroughly enjoys being alone in its truest sense, because I'll go hiking and just lose myself in the moment, which I've never been able to do before. So for me, the biggest thing I've learned from this and the biggest takeaway from this is that, hey, man, it is okay to be at home and to just be by yourself.
It's interesting. I find it interesting when you say you've never, because you're a hiker. When you and I get together, that's typically what we do.
Yeah.
So I've been with you on some. And I wouldn't say call them major hikes at all, but you know, for me, they were major hikes. And you say you've never been able to lose yourself in a hike. What does that mean?
Oh no, I'm losing myself in a hike has always been a possibility.
Okay.
That's about the only place I ever.
Oh,
could.
I see. Okay.
What I'm finding now, though, is that I can do it at home, that I actually enjoy being in my studio tinkering with things, you know, and spending, I'll look up and be like, it's been 3 hours I've been working on this. I didn't realize. Just, you know, whereas before I'd be driven to go somewhere, like I would always prepare my radio show from a coffee shop because I wanted to be around the vibe of people, the din of noise. Whereas now I'm kind of like, you know, I kind of like sitting in this leather chair and just reading a book.
It's interesting you say that because that's where the coffee shops got, you know, there's a standard joke of that's where the greatest screenplays are written. And, you know, you go and the only people you meet at the coffee shops are people who call themselves entrepreneurs. Like, what do you do? Oh, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Oh, what have you created? Oh, well, I'm just an entrepreneur. and it's just funny, but I get that need to be out because I think I'm the same way. Because I'll tell you this. When I'm by myself and things are quiet, I can't get anything done.
Right.
I have to be around noise. I have to be around – it may not be people, but if I'm going to sit down – for example, I've got an expense report due from my job, and I'm this week I've got to get it done, and I'm going to have something on in the background. And when I say something, I don't mean classical music. I mean, like, you know, The Simpsons or Bob's Burgers or some television show or some World War II documentary is going to be, I have to be on another computer sitting 3 feet away that I can occasionally look up and get distracted and then get back to work.
You need white noise.
I do. And that's really what it is. But the white noise isn't enough. I have to have, you know, this is, okay, I don't want to bring this down too much, but I'll tell you when I got into this habit was when I went through my divorce. I went from a house that was, I was either coming home with a wife or coming home to a wife.
Right.
And when she and I went through a divorce, and this was 16, 17 years ago, all of a sudden the house was empty.
Right.
She wanted the dogs, which she got for a while, but just the house was empty. So I started leaving the TV on when I'd leave. Mm. Because when I'd come home, there'd be noise to come home to.
Yeah. You couldn't stand that sort of quiet, still. But I see that as being because you had a relationship that was severed.
Yeah.
Versus,
no, I'm sure. But it's funny, I've never gotten out of that habit.
Okay.
You know, in 16, 17 years, I'm still in the habit of...
Still leave your TV on when you leave.
Yeah. I mean, like I typically have either Netflix, Hulu, or Amazon Prime playing on my computer, on my bed or on my desk.
Yeah.
And if I have to run a quick errand or if I have to just get up and go to the other room, I won't pause it. Because most of the time it's playing stuff I've seen a thousand times anyway. So it just that way it's just going. It's just ongoing.
Do you have to have that to sleep?
Boy, now you're starting to sound like one of my counselors.
Well, no, I was going to say I have to
one of my doctors.
To have noise to go to sleep.
Well, let me ask you this then, because how's your wife with that?
Well, this is how I get around it.
Okay, earphones.
I want darkness.
Yeah,
she wants total darkness.
Okay,
we have blackout shades.
Yeah,
so we have total darkness. What I do is I get my laptop.
Yeah,
I put on Hulu.
Okay.
I put on the show Frasier for some reason.
Yeah, you've loved Frasier for years.
Well, but not only that, but for some reason, the cadence of the dialogue in that show puts me to sleep within 5 minutes. But what I do is,
well,
I don't know why.
That's a great little
little
stroke for Frasier.
Well, it's that Shakespearean style that he has.
Yeah,
I don't know why, but it puts me to sleep. But what I do is I turn the screen all the way down.
Yeah.
So it's pitch black.
Oh, and you just listen.
And I just put the earbuds in, and I fall right to sleep. Between that and Green Remedy, which you talk about on your radio show, CBD, I go right to sleep.
You know what? Green Remedy is actually making hand sanitizer now in lieu of CBD. Yeah, because they just want to make sure that if there is a shortage, they want to make sure they're helping alleviate
that's
that.
They've
got the equipment to make it. So
that's fantastic.
But you know, it's funny you mentioned that because I'm the same way. I am exactly the same way. But I'll tell you what, it's not Frasier. This is the cadence that I do. I mentioned World War II documentaries a few minutes ago. The documentaries about World War II that were made in the 80s and 90s, boy, we're really deep diving right now. the cadence of those, there's a quiet calmness to those narrators that do those documentaries. There's not excitement. There's not depression. And I think that's part of it, too. Even though it's a depressing topic, it's such an interesting topic to me personally that it's just calming, bizarrely. The history of what happened in Germany and France and England at the beginning of World War II,
it's
fascinating beyond belief. But the point is that those documentaries that have taught me all that stuff, that's what I fall asleep to. That's what I fall asleep to the best. The problem is you have one episode of Frasier, which is going to last around 22, 23 minutes, without commercials.
Right.
So you say you are asleep in 5 minutes. You don't keep it playing, right?
No, I keep it playing. I keep it playing because if I wake up in the middle of the night
– Yep.
Which I usually wake up like once.
Okay.
I'll just turn over and whatever's on, it'll still be on.
Yeah.
And so I'll just keep listening. And usually, I don't know.
Golly.
Yeah. If I wake up again, like close to morning time or whatever, then I'll just take it and turn it off.
You know, here's the thing. Here's the encouraging thing about our friendship, Leland. If you and I ever find ourselves in a hotel room together, it'll work.
it'll work. Well, we had to sleep on my dad's floor. Remember when we did the basketball Bible camp on the res?
Yeah.
I had my laptop going, and you had yours. You fell asleep.
Right. I forgot about that. Oh God. gosh.
So, but back to the point at hand, because we're talking about what makes us go to sleep. But
exactly.
But I think that gives people a good idea of the fact that we are both extroverts and we probably both have a severe short attention span. And what I've found is that during this period of time, for whatever reason, it seems as though my personal attention span is maybe lengthened a little bit. Not that it's not going to go back the same way when I get done, but at least for now, I've learned how to sort of rest in the moment, if you will.
But is that not something you would want to keep?
Yes, I would.
So that gets us back on topic in the sense of, here's something that you have, in only 2 weeks, you have seen a change in your lifestyle,
right,
which has led to a change in your habits.
Right.
And typically they say it takes 17 days to create a new habit.
True.
So you're probably right in that sweet zone where if it becomes to the point, which I assume it would, where you want to hang on to this and this is a habit that is valuable to you going forward, you know, it's going to become harder once this whole thing gets past this for you not to revert back to old quote unquote bad habits, even though they may not be bad habits. They just may be your personality, but here you found a little benefit.
Right.
A forced benefit of this that is going to help you look going forward.
Well, what I want to seek is a balance between the two, because I've always lived my life with a sense of urgency, and I think it's what's led to most of my success, because mm-hmm. I'm always the one that, like, you know, I'm not nearly as talented as a lot of people around me in the business that I'm in.
You're Paul Simon.
But I work my ass off.
Yeah.
And so I don't ever want to lose that sense of urgency, and I don't think I will. But I do enjoy, at least for this period of time, that ability to just maybe I'm becoming better at compartmentalizing things.
Yeah.
Which probably will do me well in the other. Yeah, it has its good and bad, but I think maybe will help me out on the other side.
So one of the things I've seen happen in my neighborhood, and Joey Police, who you know.
Yeah.
Joey was on my show last night, and so we're having this exact same conversation. What are some things that have come out that you've noticed coming out in people, coming out in your neighborhoods, because everyone's outside.
Right.
I know in Lexington, the weather has been fantastic the last 2 weeks. It's that beautiful March, April, spring weather.
Oh, I love it.
So everybody's outside. And now, because everyone's going stir crazy, everybody's outside. It's not even like typically this would be March, April, half of everyone's outside. Now everybody's just outside enjoying the weather and trying not to go crazy.
Right.
But what I've noticed is the smiles, the waves, we're constantly, there's this big elephant in the room that we're all very aware of.
Right.
And so when you go for a walk around the neighborhood, and I've hit 6-7 straight days now of just, I get out and going for a walk.
Yeah.
Now of course I've still got my white noise on, my music or my podcast or whatever. But just going out and you see and you make eye contact with someone, and typically, even in Kentucky, right, where we both lived for a great deal of our lives, you know, we're waving people, we're smiling, you know, we'll be friendly to strangers, but it's more of that now. You know, I would notice even in my neighborhood there would be times where I would walk by someone and I don't want to get into that awkward smile. Are we going to smile? Are we going to wave? Are we going to shake hands? Are we going to do this? So I would just ignore. Head down and pass.
Right.
Nobody's doing that now.
Right.
And everyone is going through that, hello, yep, we're all suffering, yep, hope you're not suffering. You know, I mean, you don't even say that, but you say it with a quick smile.
Yes.
And Joey mentioned this on the show last night. He said the kindness going on, he goes, that's what he hopes we don't revert back to on, that we don't get away from just being kind to each other. The other day, I forget where I was on my way home, I was less than a mile away, and my truck started it up and it sputtered, and it's been doing this. It's another story, but it's been doing this on and off and on and off for more than a year, where occasionally it'll just sputter and it won't get gas and it'll shut off, and then I'll wear the battery down trying to get started, and if I wait 15 to 30 minutes, I can start it up, it'll work perfectly fine. So it's just this bizarre thing that the mechanics have a hard time diagnosing. Long story short, it happens the other day, and I wind up blocking the driveway of a shopping center. And now it's late at night, so fortunately I'm not in anyone's way, but I'm concerned about it. And I call my dad. I'm like, hey, you may need to come get me. I don't know. You know, I don't know if this guy, but I had three people stop. Now this isn't at night, Leland. And you know, it's like 11, 12 o'clock and people are stopping, slowing down, rolling down their windows. Are you okay? Do you need anything?
Wow.
Can I help? I'm like, strangers. I'm like, that maybe that does happen. Maybe one of those cars stops.
Right.
All three cars don't stop under normal circumstances.
That's fascinating. I'm definitely seeing the same sort of thing, especially because I have been hiking about every day.
Yeah.
And on the trails, there's this sort of new way of passing each other that's developed where you step far to the side.
Yep.
But in so doing, you sort of give this sort of – there's always a conversation that begins because I think there's there's a reticence to – look, I'm not stepping around you because I think you're a leper. But because
well, we all might be lepers.
Right, but because we've been told to and
right.
we're all going to sort of acknowledge that out of respect for each other, but then there's this kindness that sort of comes out of it and these conversations that develop.
It is this weird thing. I noticed this the other day. I went hiking with a friend and – we were walking down the trail. We were walking down to the Kentucky River. Walking down the trail, we passed probably four different groups. And there was this – and there's plenty of room. There's plenty of room to have 6 feet in between us without doing anything. But we all still walked around and made it more of a 10-foot gap. But there wasn't anything like, you know – because we all assumed everyone knew what was going on. And that's the thing is it's this elephant in the room that everyone knows. We're all going through the same thing. A vast, large majority of the country is going through the exact same thing, meaning, you know, they haven't been personally affected by this. They haven't had anyone they know be personally affected by this. But it's this, okay, but we're all going to live by these kind of forced rules, even though we live in a free country. And there's some good things about it.
Yeah, I mean, you asked at the beginning how I felt about the panic. And
yeah,
I mean, I still feel like the longer we go with this, the more we're hurting people.
Yeah.
You know, and people are going to say, people are going to say, well, it's their wallets and that's not as important. Well, you know, I don't know if anybody saw the video that's coming out of Pennsylvania today.
I saw that. That's I was getting ready to bring that up, that video you posted.
Those are people that probably 3 weeks ago were living paycheck to paycheck and now they have nothing and they don't even know how they're going to feed their families. And that is the part of this that we have to keep in mind that. The economy crashing the way that it would in, say, a Great Depression will physically kill people. People that will lose their health care and then come down sick. It will bankrupt and it will kill people. There'll be a spate of suicides, et cetera. And we're talking about all this kindness that's come out of it. And I agree. And I hope that that sort of helps buffer us as we go into, because I think this is a multi-stage challenge for our country. The virus itself is the first stage. The second stage is going to be digging out of what shutting down has done to us as an economy and helping each other then. So that's why I agree with you. I hope we have that same level of kindness when on the other side of us, 30 to 40% of us are unemployed.
You know, it's interesting. You've got, okay, if boy, that 30 to 40%, I mean, that's definitely, you're talking 1920s.
Well, it's worse than that. I mean, I saw it was Reason.com had an article where they estimated 30%, which in the Depression, the greatest extent of it was 24.9.
Yeah. You know what's funny, though, is because – and look, I'm not an expert on economics on any stretch of the imagination, but I don't know what leads to recessions. I don't know what leads to depressions. I certainly understand this is an odd bird that leads to one.
Right.
And I wonder sometimes if because of how this is going to lead to a recession or depression, if once things open back up, like if it's Easter or, you know, as Trump is saying, or if it's, let's say, May 1st, when things open back up and they free us up a little bit more, if at that point things aren't just going to rebound quickly because of how quickly things shut down. It's like all of a sudden, okay, everyone's going to start hiring again because business is going to go back to where business was. It may not rebound immediately, but I feel like, and again, with the caveat of me not understanding how economics works very well, I just feel like it would just kind of jump back eventually quicker than a normal depression it would.
Because I
think in a normal depression, there's a lot of hesitancy and unknown.
Right.
And with this, it's pretty clear what's caused this.
Right.
It's pretty clear what would fix this.
I agree. And in fact, I actually disagree with the Reason.com's analysis that we'll get to 30% permanently.
Yeah.
I think though temporarily, I think we're already there. But I do agree that we'll bounce back quicker than we did in the Great Depression, because what got us out of the Great Depression was World War II. What happened is we had way too many stimulus plans going on in the 30s that sort of kept the economy tamped down, and then when we got into the World War II, we had to go into this sort of vast manufacturing machine that woke up.
Yep.
There's an element of that to this now, where we've got companies, you know, you mentioned Green Remedy switching over to hand sanitizer. Yeah. You've got Ford and GM and Tesla working together to make respirators and things like that. So, but the fundamentals of the economy were really the best I've ever seen in my life when this whole thing started. That hasn't gone away. We still have an incredibly educated workforce that's ready to go to work, and we have a consumer-hungry economy. But there is going to be enormous economic pain from this, and the longer we go, the closer we're going to come to that 30% number. Yeah. You know?
Well, you know, the one thing that I keep watching is the number of cases and the number of deaths associated with those cases.
Right.
And I don't know what the statistics. I remember hearing that, you know, it's concerning if the statistics get to as high as 3 to 5% death rate as a result of this. Well, right now, as of today, it's like 1.7.
Right.
Well. So, and again, I neither one of us are saying this isn't something to be concerned about.
Right.
But I just wonder. It's like, okay, how much are we making? And the thing is, Leland, no one's going to know. No one's going to know one way or the other whether we did the right thing or not. No one's really going to know the truth. We're all going to speculate. We're all going to guess, well, you know, they shouldn't have socially distanced us. It wasn't that big a deal. Or maybe they should have and they should have kept it longer. Nobody's going to know. It's just whatever it is going to be. And then people dependent upon political positioning is going to say, well, this president made a mistake or this governor made a mistake or, you know, what have you.
I think you make an interesting point. Because I think, you know, going back to the article that I posted on my social media by Peter Hitchens, he used the example of if a doctor comes to you, you have a horrible case of pneumonia, and the doctor comes to you and says, well, we're going to have to cut your leg off. And he cuts the leg off, and then 4 or 5 weeks, you know, a few days later, you're better. You know, pneumonia goes away on its own. Yep. You have no way of proving that that drastic measure of cutting your leg off healed it or didn't heal it, right? Well, you know, and so the point that he's making is that there's a bunch of different countries handling this in different ways, and some of those countries that are handling it in very different ways from each other are seeing the same results.
Yeah.
Meaning we don't know whether shutting everything down is actually having a positive effect or not on this. And in some cases, like in Italy, I think it had a negative effect. And in New York, I think it's having a negative effect because have people so jam-packed close together, they can't get away from each other even if they're self-quarantining.
Yeah, New York is an interesting case study to me because I've heard it's a bunch of kids. Because we had this happen the other day. There apparently was I just heard this, you know, secondhand, third hand, but there was a party that was thrown. And, of course, this is the last time, you know, I mean, I don't think it's illegal, but it's certainly being frowned upon right now. And so there were people tattling on the party invitees, party goers, saying, no, someone needs to call the police.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's as far as we need to go. But that's the problem with New York is that I've heard that they're not, for a while at least, now, maybe now they are.
Paying attention.
They weren't taking it serious enough. And then you're right, they're jam-packed in, and so the social distance, I mean, they don't have like a big – they've got a big park they could go walk around in, but can they? Is that safe? Whereas I can walk around a neighborhood and not come into physical contact with another human being or even within 20 feet.
Right.
Actually, I can come within a quarter mile of anyone else if I'm careful.
Right.
And they don't have that luxury in New York.
Yeah, and I was thinking about, like, for instance, if you live in one of these buildings where you have, 500 square feet.
Yeah.
And they have the same ventilation system that sort of runs through the building. This is an airborne disease.
Is it?
Yeah, but even more than that, it's airborne. It's in the sense that particulate, like if somebody coughs or sneezes, the droplets are aerosol.
Oh, okay.
But what about if you live in one of these buildings, right, and you need to go out to the grocery store? You go to the elevator. You touch the elevator button. You go down the stairs. You touch the stair rail. You know, and all these people are jammed in this building with you. Again, there's some situations where – I'm not saying they shouldn't social distance. I'm just saying in some situations
it's hard, impossible.
Yeah, and in Italy it was that combined with, you know, in Europe they tend to live a little closer together, and you had multi-generations in the home. So you'd have a young person who didn't look like they had the disease because they had no effects from it, suddenly jammed into the same house with grandma.
Yeah.
Grandma gets it and grandma dies because she's smoking. You know, there's all these sort of weird complications to it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Let's get back on the topic we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
Because you brought up the generational thing. And this came up, I think last night on my show, Garrett brought it up. But then also Matt Jones tweeted something about it. earlier this week saying about handshaking.
Yes, I saw that.
Is the handshake thing going to be, is that something that's going to go away simply out of fear, and then we get in the habit, and therefore, because it is an odd thing. The handshake, if you sit back and you think about it, it is just habitual, it is traditional, and there's nothing in humans that you have to do that. There's something in us that, you know, that physical contact, you know, in a business professional atmosphere is appropriate, but now we get to the point, because here's what I've noticed about you. Mentioned that you were having a lot of quiet time, doing a lot of reading or a lot of fiddling with your equipment in your studio, and time would go by. Here's what I've noticed, and it's not nearly as exciting as yours. I wash my hands 20 times a day now, and that's probably more than I've ever washed my hands in the entirety of my life.
Right.
And all of a sudden, because, and I think part of it is a concern about my parents who live in my basement, and so I don't, and they're both older, and I don't, you know, I'm not worried about getting this. You know, I don't want to, but I'm not worried about it, life or death. I definitely don't want my parents to. And so I'm just constantly overthinking about sanitation or you know, just making sure everything's clean. I've never been like that. So never been like that in my life. And so now I'm wondering, on the other side, what is this going to look like for me?
So are you saying that this is turning into a gun, into a germaphobe?
No, it definitely is not that. I don't know.
It's turning me into a little bit of one.
Is it really?
Yeah, because going back to, I never really thought about this kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Going back to what a Matt Jones tweet.
Yeah.
I saw that tweet and I thought to myself, yeah, probably not. We're probably not going to shake hands ever again. And there's going to be a real awkward
it's
be dance.
Awkward.
Yes. When we
it's
go back
so
to work,
awkward.
I was thinking about this. When we go back to work, you know, I've been in media for a long time. People always want to come up and shake my hands. And
that's not just how business works.
Look at you. You're freaking Cameron Mills. How many people just go, "Hey, Cameron," you know, they come up to you, they want to shake your hands. So it's going to be real awkward. Like, what do we do? Because I'm a handshaker. You
I'm
going
to tell you what we're going to do.
All right,
we're going to jump ahead. We're not going to go back to it, but that's going to lead to so many awkward encounters.
Yes,
it's like, remember the high five thing when you and I were playing ball. You know, and it's just going to last 20 years. You know, when you get hung, somebody leave you hanging.
Yes.
Right? So there's going to be a lot of leaving people hanging.
Yeah.
So here's what I think we're going to do. I think we're going to go back, and I hate this, because I think it's one of the dumbest things we've ever come up with. We're going to go back to the stupid fist bump.
Yeah, I think the fist bump is
imagine? I mean, signing a million-dollar contract, big business things, at the end, we're not going to shake hands. We're going to do a fist bump to officialize
this. You should do the exploding fist bump, like that was really popular about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
You'd be like,
yeah,
whoop.
I just knew it was a problem when I saw golfers doing it.
Yeah.
At the end of a round, instead of shaking hands, they'd do the fist bump. But when was the last time, because I've noticed this as well, I touch my face constantly.
Yes.
I am never aware. The only other time I've been aware of how much I touch my face with my hands is when I had nose surgery. I had a deviated septum from an elbow I got when I played ball at UK. So I finally got it fixed in 2004, and they told me, I said, "Now look, just you're pain-wise, you're going to be okay. Just don't touch it." And
right.
I'm like, I never touch my nose. Never. Oh, yes, I do.
Right.
And would constantly, I mean, it would be like crying pain to the point where I would just slightly graze it. And so now I'm thinking about every time I touch my face. And it's consciously in me, and I'm so much more aware of it. And I didn't realize how often I did it again.
Right.
Like, it's just, you know. So going back to the fist bump, because as Garrett said last night on my show, how often do you touch your face with the outside of your knuckles?
Right.
Very seldom.
Yeah. That's an interesting point, because I heard a thing on the radio the other day that we, on average, touch our face somewhere around 200 times a day.
I believe that.
Yeah, and
it sounds crazy, but I believe it.
You know what else has kind of freaked me out about all this is like the elbow bump. That's the other thing. Don't do the fist bump, do the elbow bump. But then at the same time, they're telling everybody cough in their elbow.
Right.
So I'm like, wait a minute. If you're telling me to cough into my elbow and then the elbow bump somebody, am I not just transmitting it right there off my elbow?
I'm wondering. See, and this gets into the details of the disease. I'm wondering, okay, if you cough into your elbow, there's an assumption you're coughing into some fabric.
Right.
Can the virus live on a fabric?
I saw the article that a virus can live on fabric for about 48 hours.
A virus. But
a
see,
virus.
I don't think you can
that coronavirus.
D-virus.
They
okay,
think
right.
coronavirus can live on fabric for about 48 hours.
But then we get to, okay, all right, at some point, this is where we can get overthinking. Okay, and maybe it's a good thing. But, okay, let's say someone's coughs into their elbow. Then we get an elbow bump, as Trump actually got. And he got it from a guy named Bruce Greenstein, who is an executive for LHC Group, which is the company I work for.
Right.
Bruce Greenstein was with Trump at the White House that day, and he was the one that Trump had that awkward little elbow bump with.
Oh.
And, yeah, that Bruce has worked with us for about 3 or 4 years.
That's funny.
Anyway, so – okay, so now I elbow bump you. I transfer the – let's just call them germs for now. I transfer the germs to your elbow on the outside of your clothing. If it lives 48 hours, at some point you're going to take that shirt off and your hands might actually grab that elbow. Now are they on your hands?
Yeah.
Now you've got to make sure you're washing
your
hands.
You've got to wash your hands again. See, I think –
that's what's worrying me. It's those kind of like – trace to trace to trace to trace things.
This is where I honestly believe the panic has gotten a little too much. That's what I'm saying. You know, I can't think, because I saw an article the other day that said I was supposed to be afraid to open my Amazon packages that came because it could live on cardboard for a week. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to freaking do that. I'm going to wash my hands before I prepare food. Yeah. I'm going to wash my hands after I go to the bathroom. I'm going to wash my hands when I come home from having been somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sanitize my hands if I'm out and I touch a doorknob or something like that.
Yeah.
But I'm not necessarily going to sit here and go, I touched a box. Did it touch the fabric on my arm?
Yeah.
I can't do it. Almost at some point it becomes living with that becomes more awful than the potential to get a virus and get over it. You know?
Well, and I think that's the thing with you. You're living in a position, you and your wife are young, you're healthy.
Right.
You know, you all probably, because again, I keep hearing there are so many people that have this that are asymptomatic. You and Tabitha might not even know that you have it.
Right.
And have it.
Right.
And so it would, that's far more. It's just a matter of that, I don't know what to call it, but the amount of time you can be a carrier of it.
Right.
That's leading to, or that I guess is really the difference in this and the average flu. That's why this is a big concern, because apparently you can carry this a lot longer and not know it.
Right. So. Well, at the same time, this is something I'm trying to figure out. I was just reading a headline that Dr. Birx, who's part of the White House task force on this, she is saying that somewhere between 100 and 200,000 people dead from this is the best case scenario, even with perfect social distancing.
Okay.
Now, I'm assuming that means worldwide. I'm assuming that means that because
right now we're like at 1,700 in the country.
I can't. Maybe I'm wrong, and I hope I'm right. I don't. I just don't know that that's the scenario that takes place.
Yeah.
I mean, based on what I'm seeing with people diligently trying to stay away from each other. Yeah, there's still some gatherings in Louisville the other night. There was a bunch of people out doing a dumbass thing where they were downtown drag racing their cars, and there was about 500 people that gathered. Yeah, there's going to be people that are going to do stupid crap like that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I don't know, man.
Look, it's a frustrating thing, and it's our thing, and I go back to what I said earlier. No one's going to truly know if we did the right thing or not, if we overreacted, if we underreacted. We're just not going to know. I mean,
right.
There's just no way of finding out. You know, maybe history can judge us in 100 years, but there's just no way of knowing whether or not we've made the right call in any of this. The problem is, and you know, you deal in politics a lot, is that both sides are going to use this as ammo one way or the other, and that's where I just start tuning out.
Yeah, I hate the politics of this, because there was a time when we would have a major national thing like this
happen. There was 9/11.
Right, and we would all come together behind whoever the president is.
Right.
And now it's just been the hatred of our current president has been driving most of the media's coverage of this in a way that I think has driven the panic up as well. I got to ask, I mean, you know, I don't know, in your community there over in Lexington, can you get toilet paper if you go to the grocery store?
Yes, as a matter of fact, and I still don't understand the run on toilet paper.
I don't either.
I've yet to figure out why that, of all things. To me, there needs to be a run on fruit, vegetables, and beef.
Right.
That would make
that's
sense to me.
That's what I would do. I mean, I bought an extra freezer. Because freezer
I've
was
got one
full.
Too.
Not because I want to hoard the meat from people.
No.
But my freezer was full, and I was like, I would like to not turn away a good meat sale, and I get Butcher Box thanks to you.
I do too.
And
I've got one coming. Actually, it may come today or tomorrow.
Yeah, mine too. And I've got. I'm gonna have to. My backup freezer is gonna be full, so I'm not worried, man. I did go to Amazon, and my wife found 80 rolls of Scotch tissue. Yeah, and she ordered that, and we got some tissue paper today.
So the
too,
Conways so. Are sitting pretty.
We're sitting pretty. I'm
You're
thinking
sitting
about
on a ton of gold.
Thinking about opening up a TP stand
yeah,
and selling
absolutely.
Them for $20 a roll on
yeah,
the corner.
I'd lose respect for you if you did that, but yeah, you could.
Make some money though.
So yesterday, so I say about a week ago, I walked into my little market, Walmart / Kroger, and that's all that was gone. And I was so poor. I may have even mentioned this to you. We may have talked about it already. This poor lady that's working there, and I'm like, wait a minute. What's I said, are we, y'all just out? She goes, no, they just everyone's come and got it. I said, because of this, meaning the COVID? She goes, yeah. And she just rolled her eyes. Now, she doesn't know any better than I do, but that's the one thing consistently that has been gone here. Yesterday, I'll tell you the funny thing, though. The really cheap rolls
yeah.
you can still get.
Yeah.
So it's not that we're in desperation to have toilet paper. We're in desperation as one percenters, I guess, to have the best of the best types of toilet
That's
paper.
What it is, yeah.
It's the cheap stuff. No, I don't need that. As a matter of fact, I'll leave that on the counter and drive across town to somewhere else that might have the good stuff.
I talked to one Target employee, and I said, what's the deal with this? Are you guys – he goes, no, we're not having a supply problem. It comes. We get a truck every day. And he said, we bring in the toilet paper. He said, honestly, we roll it out here. The store opens at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
At 8:05, it's all gone.
Yeah.
And I was like, are these the same people? He's like, yeah, the same small group of people.
Yeah.
So somewhere
yeah.
in each community is some jackass whose entire basement is yeah. nothing but toilet paper and eggs.
Well,
he buys eggs. And toilet paper every morning.
Eggs make sense.
Yeah,
now,
no.
they're not going to last forever.
You can't freeze eggs. Why
Where's
do you
point?
Buy
they're
all
not,
the eggs
they're not
every
last
day?
Forever. Well, so here's the other thing. So the other two things I've heard is that number one is that there has been at one of the stores, maybe in Kentucky, it may not have been in Lexington, maybe in Kentucky, there was the store had to hire a security guard.
Yeah.
To stand watch and make sure one package of TP per person.
Yes.
Right? Then a lot of people started when they realized, okay, we've overreacted.
Yeah.
They tried to bring it back and the stores would not accept it.
Right.
And which was kind of this funny way of the store saying, heck no. No, we're not you're not trading toilet paper back even with a receipt.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy.
So what else then? Let's go okay. one or two more things. What yeah. else have you noticed that you're like, okay, this is the way I'm changing?
Okay, so I know that I am actually glad that I pretty much work from home, and I pretty much want to do that the rest of my life. There's something about the freedom of it, and I think that personally, I think you're going to see a major shift in the economy yeah. after this, and you're going to see an enormous number of people reconfiguring their companies so that, you know, if you're not nope. necessary in the office, that you can work from a home office. I think yeah. that's going to be a major shift in the economy, and I think it's probably a good thing.
Well, I will tell you this. So I work for a company that LHC Group. We're one of the largest home health and hospice companies in the country. And that's kind of the difference in home health and clinical health is there are certain things that nursing homes can do in a nursing home. That's a more severe acute situation. But there are many, many cases and many, many cases involving this virus where we can help. But the point is we don't have the overhead of a clinic.
Right.
We don't have the overhead of a building. And so many of our employees, because we're spread out over around 35 states, many of our employees work from home.
Right.
I'm a home office employee for LHC Group. I work in Kentucky.
Right.
I mean, I work from home. Now, the funny thing to me, and I don't know if you and I have talked about this or not, but when you work from home, there's an adjustment period there, at least there was for me. If I don't get up and I don't take a shower and I don't put on some business slacks and a polo at least, I don't get anything done.
Right.
If I get up and I just lounge around and I basically try to work in my pajamas – do you still call them pajamas? Are they still what they
PJs.
Call them? PJs, okay. If I try to work in my sleepwear, I'm getting nothing done. But I completely agree with you. I think a lot of companies are going to realize that it's possible and will save them some overhead and some
yeah.
money if they have remote employees. The problem is that there's a lot more accountability that needs to happen, at least personally there was for me, where I had to realize – I'm not getting my work done. I got to get my work done.
Yeah.
I've got a responsibility here to this company. They're paying me. I owe them something.
Right.
I've got to get my work done. And having days where I don't, you know, that's just, that's not fair to them. So I had to make that adjustment of, okay, when you go to work and you have your boss, you know, down the hall,
right,
or, you know, there's that expectation and you feel it. You feel that pressure. And pressure is not a bad thing. Pressure is a good thing. Pressure makes sure you get your job done or you get the work done you need to work, whether it's work or not.
But I think part of
that
shift,
when you work at home, it's harder.
But I think part of that shift is going to be the technology is already there and a lot of companies are already using it, where you can have a virtual boss down the hall. Where, yeah, you know, in my wife's system where she works, it's impossible to just go do whatever the hell you want, even though you're working from home. There's, yeah, there's instant communication, you know, pathways where it's as if you're all in the same room, but yeah, you're just sitting at your kitchen table or at your office desk or whatever.
No, and they do that. And there's, yeah, a lot of video conferencing and video conference call. You know, the company Zoom, that technology, their stock has flown up.
Yeah.
I don't know where it is today, but, you know, and that is just because of this. That is a direct result of this.
Yeah.
I had a Zoom call.
I had a Zoom business call the other day. And in fact, I talked to the guy and the guy was saying that he's thinking about when this is over. He owns a company that's got like 40 or 50 employees that, yeah, are all in the same building and they've, yeah, got, you know, X amount of 1,000 square feet of space. And he's like, I could probably do this with an office that has, you know, 1,500, 2,500 square feet and just let everybody else work from home. He's, yeah, thinking about how am I going to fashion that going forward and save that enormous amount of overhead. One other lesson. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, but does that help or hurt the economy at large? Because now you've got a lack of retail space,
yeah,
business space going rented, but you've got companies who could rent them saving money.
Yeah.
So that's where
– in retail, I think, is going to experience a revolution as well.
Well, it has in some way. That's the brilliance of Amazon.
Yeah, this could be the death knell for them, though.
Yeah.
Because it was already trending that way. But now it's almost like brick-and-mortar stores are just going to be so you can look and you'll order elsewhere.
Yeah, and see, to me, that's a bad term because there's something – and maybe 50 years from now, it won't matter to those that are around. But to me, there's still something about – Apple's a perfect example. I'll order something off the Apple store or on the online store if I know what it is. But if I want to go ask a bunch of questions and talk and feel and touch, then I'm going to go to the Apple store. And yeah, I want to go do that. I don't want to just order it online.
Right. So, one other lesson,
yeah,
that I think we could probably you know, kind of make this point. I hope that people take from this, get out of debt, consumer debt, and stay out of it.
Yeah.
People that are in a heavy amount of consumer debt are at the most danger to be really drastically affected by this situation. And I feel for that. And you know, just I would say one other lesson that I hope a lot of Americans take from this, because there were articles leading into this before the, you know, the outbreak, yeah, happened, that we're talking about how we were at a record level of household debt in America. And it concerns me that could be a potential second wave economic topple that you can't, yeah, recover from quickly. If that's not handled properly.
It's funny you mention that, because fortunately, without knowing, just simply knowing that I needed to get out of debt, as we all need to get out of debt, 2 months ago, before this whole thing break, and of course, I had no idea was coming, but I did. I refinanced my house, so the only debt I have is my house.
Right.
But I was able to get out of credit card debt.
Awesome.
I was able to get out of a car payment. So the only thing I have now is my house.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And I owe the IRS a little money, but we have an understanding.
About that.
Yeah, we've got an agreement where I send them a rather large check. But that is part of debt, because they're charging me interest, and
right,
that goes back years.
Yeah.
But it's the credit card debt, that 29% interest rate. You're like, you don't realize. I mean, Leland, on every campus, as soon as college opens, every school year opens, you've got credit card companies camping out,
yep,
on the universities, basically. Basically giving credit cards away.
That's how
giving them away.
Yeah, I got
they're
a free
giving
pizza.
Them to them for like this 3% interest rate for the first 6 months, and then it balloons to 29, and they carry that debt with them,
yep,
for years. You and I have already talked long before this disruption zone. We've talked about the debt that people carry, the educational debt,
yep,
you know, the college debt, that kind of thing. It's just this thing. It sinks your hands, or it sinks its claws into you early. And the people that are able to get out of it, and look, here's the thing, because I think there are a lot of people who would say, well, you know, Leland, you're just fortunate enough to have a job that you can afford to get out of debt. okay, but you also made it a point and you made sacrifices in order to do it. You can't get out of debt. I don't care how much money you make. You can't get out of debt unless you make some sacrifices,
right,
and you have some discipline to get out of debt.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things. It's funny you mentioned this because this works in perfectly with the last thing that I was going to mention that I've noticed, because it runs along the same lines. That's one of the things that I said was my New Year's resolution, was I was going to be smarter and better with my money this
right.
year.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to overspend. I wasn't going to, and I have done pretty well so far. I haven't, you know, I got my credit cards refinanced. I haven't charged those back up. I'm just trying to live a little more frugally. I'm trying to be better about budgeting, and that's when it leads to, you've got a little stockpile, a safety stockpile.
Yep.
So not only are you not in debt, but you've got this emergency fund.
You know what happens when you have that? You don't go out and buy a bunch of toilet paper.
That's
right.
That's
you right. don't freak
yeah.
out.
Yeah. Yeah, we says the person who just bought 80 rolls.
I did. We were working towards that goal before this happened, but
of 80 rolls of toilet paper?
No, we're doubling down now on that because it's that yeah. important to us. And you were mentioning yeah. the credit card thing. You know, the credit card company came on my college campus, hired the two yep. hottest girls.
Of course.
Put them
did.
In short shorts
yep.
out there with a table and gave yep. me a free t-shirt and a free pizza and a $500 credit limit for just signing my name.
Yeah.
And $5,000 later, right uh-huh. before I got married, and a credit score of 540,
yep.
and I had learned that lesson the hard way.
Yeah.
All because of two hot chicks in short shorts and a free pizza.
And,
you know,
it's
my fault. It is not their fault.
No,
it
that's
is
right.
my
but,
fault.
And,
I made that
but
choice.
But what they really offered you was $500.
Yeah.
That to a 19-year-old, that's $500 that I can use tonight at Target to
yep.
make my dorm room a lot cooler looking.
Or in my case, I don't have any date money this weekend. I got this girl I'm trying to pick up. We're going to go out. It's just
$50. One of those credit card
girls. I'll pay it off with my tips from Domino's next week.
Right.
Then next week, I need new shoes.
Yep, that's right.
Then next week, my car breaks down,
yeah.
and it's $5,000.
You're right.
And, you know, it's
and that's,
like that.
That's the thing. And it takes... It takes some struggle and some sweat and some toil and some discipline
yeah.
to do it. But I can tell you, it's worth it.
It's
just not having that
it.
Hanging over your head.
Yeah. Well, these are the lessons that Cameron and I think we should learn, you know,
among many
coronavirus.
But for now.
But hey, next time we chat later this week, I think
yeah.
we should do one that has nothing to do with the coronavirus.
I agree. Let's get off this topic and talk about something.
Well,
something
and
I've got
getting ready to record a podcast with a very good friend of mine, one of my high school best friends. You met his dad when we went out to do some work for my dad.
Okay.
Michael,
was it the lady and the gentleman that showed up late one night?
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Mike Siskiller.
Yeah.
That was his parents, Roy and Sandra.
Well, I met Mike.
Oh, you did meet Mike. Okay.
Yeah, remember I kept making fun of his name.
That's
I'm like,
right.
wait a minute.
That's right. You
this
did.
Is the most Native American name I've ever
no,
heard.
No, you met Jason.
Well, I met a Siskiller, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and if you listen to Leland regularly, let me tell you, when you hear me say six killer, I'm saying six killer. As in, I don't know if it's spelled this way, but this is how it sounds. S-I-X.
It is spelled that way.
K-I-L-L-E-R.
Yes.
That's this gentleman's last name.
It's spelled
it is
that
the,
way.
It is the most badass name ever.
Yes, it is. It is. Anyway, he was my best friend in high school. We remain best friends to this day. And it was funny how we met. I was playing. My parents are missionaries on the American Indian field, for those who don't know. And we had just moved there. I was about 8 years old. I was playing in the dry wash out in front of our house.
Right.
And
oh, yeah.
I was playing with my G.I. Joes. And Mike Siskiller comes over. And he's wearing this huge belt buckle. And it says Siskiller on it. And I said, what is that? And he goes... I have to kill
oh.
six white people today, and you're number six.
What a great comment.
And he chased me back to his house. I had dinner with his family, and we've been friends ever since.
Well, he
works for the Navajo Nation now.
Oh,
and
okay.
They are getting hit by this coronavirus.
Really?
Devastatingly.
Wow. That'd be an interesting conversation.
Yeah, we're
going to
talk
why.
To him. Yeah, we're going to talk to
well,
him about it and the response that they have and how their community is unifying around it. And how awesome things are happening in the midst of devastation.
If you remember, I'll remind you of this, and then we'll be done. But you and I and Jason and one other friend of yours, we went out into the middle of the desert.
Yes.
With my camera, my tripod, to try to get some great starlight pictures.
Yep.
Because we were completely away from any
civilization
light pollution. It was
yeah.
just pitch black, and I was getting some great starlight pictures. And a couple times, you know, you all were – there were a couple times where you all tensed up when you saw some headlights.
Yep.
And I'm like, what are we worried about? I mean, I'm worried about coyotes and mountain lions out here. I don't know what you two are worried about with the headlights. And it was like, well, guys, you were like, Cameron, we're close to the border.
Right.
We got the other kind of coyotes running through here and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So anytime y'all see headlights, y'all would tense up. And the only thing that made me feel safe was that I was with a six killer.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he...
I mean, just the name. I knew I was with a six killer.
You're going to be all right.
Yeah,
it's going to be good. Listen, good talking to you. We'll
you too,
chat
bud.
Some more later this week. And like I said, we'll give everybody a break from coronavirus. Thank you for everybody for listening. Dynamics Productions helps us produce this program. It's dxaudio.com. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at
Zone Disruption
because some jackwagon took the disruption zone. Cameron is Cameron Mills. With a Z.
Yep.
And I'm at Leland Show. And the best thing you can do for us is share this podcast. It's now available on the iHeartRadio app.
How about that?
So that's free just to get it downloaded. Also,
time.
Same on Apple Podcasts and Google Play. Thanks, Cameron.
All right, buddy.
You've been listening to The Disruption Zone.